Sam, what's happening?
Cool.
You there? Cheers. Yeah, I'm doing the virtual cheers from Europe to Australia right here. I only got a pen, so I got to do it with a pen.
Yeah, it's a beautiful Thursday evening on the Gold Coast. Well, I'm not drinking, so I can do it with a kombucha.
Yeah, we keep this like kids friendly. This show is kids friendly. Only kombucha.
All ages. What's been happening on your end?
You know, just getting through COVID, struggling through COVID. But yeah, I'm in Europe now. As people probably don't know, Sam and I, we go way back. We actually went to school together. We did the notorious, famous surf studies together in Australia. And
many international alumni.
Exactly, exactly. The best program you can do, surfing studies. Yeah, so we actually go way back, and it was nice to actually hop on the call with you because it's been a while. We've been like texting and emailing like back and forth, but it's good to actually see you and like, you know, talk to you again.
Oh, yeah, far out. I don't even know how long it's been since we've properly caught up. Like, I wouldn't even guess how long it's been since in person. How long since you've been in Australia?
I mean, I've been going back and forth, right? And like, I think the last time I saw you, 2 years. I think 2 years was the last time I saw you there. I remember that beautiful day having a coffee with Sam, and he had like real short hair at the time, and now it's freaking, you know, rock star mode. So it's been a long time. what's been happening on your end?
I know 3 years of growth right here since I had
See, crazy. So it might have actually been 3 years since we saw each other. But I know JS is keeping you busy. You're the brand manager at JS.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've worked for Jason for 5.5 years now. Sort of my first like real job out of uni since we finished school. And yeah, we've been busy. COVID's thrown a lot of curveballs. Like the surfboard business is booming in a lot of ways, but that comes with its own set of challenges from like staff able to work, willing to work, supply chain, border closures, on a factory that is within 1 kilometer of that border, meaning half your staff may or may not be able to get to work. So yeah, lots of curveballs. Just before we were talking about how, you know, the Queensland, New South Wales border is completely closed. And we just filmed a clip that I've lovingly titled A Tale of Two Factories. And it's how when they closed, they did a snap lockdown and closure of the New South Wales Tweed border. So that pretty much everyone on the Queensland side wasn't able to get to the JS factory, which is the first street, literally the first street over the border on the New South Wales side. Meant that all of those workers couldn't get to the factory. So almost overnight, those like 20, 25 guys that were stuck on the Queensland side, not able to get to work, they were without a job, and we had to think on our feet. So, yeah, thankfully we've got some very resourceful people, not just running our company but also in the surf industry around us. The coast is a hub of like all the surfboard manufacturing around here. So yeah, we had our general manager Paul Stacey source the perfect, I guess, like backup option, which was the DMS factory in Currumbin. Dan McDonald, who runs that's a legend, and he was like, yeah, I've got extra space, I'll rent out some of my glassing shaping bays to you guys. So that kept us going. And anyone that follows JS social media will see in a little bit when we put up that clip, but it's literally got our blanks that are being shaped, like cut, then shaped, and started the process of making a surfboard on the New South Wales side, a regular HQ.
Yeah.
Driven to the border, handed over from one van to another, and then taken to the Queensland the new HQ inside DMS's existing Crumbin factory. So as ludicrous as that looks, that's literally what the supply chain looked like for a while.
That's crazy because
it felt pretty weird that we had to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that, you know, there's like this like rivalry between, you know, shaping bays and like surfboard brands, because like for, you know, like in Queensland or that area, like from Currumbin to Coolangatta or Tweed, there's a lot of surfboard factories right there. So I would think like they would all have these like little, you know, little fights and like little, you know, shoulder rubbings, but it's actually cool to hear that, you know, in this day and age, like they're actually helping each other out. Especially two big brands.
For sure. You know, I mean, there's healthy DMS. Rivalries.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess a lot might be happy to see like a bigger brand experience some hardship. It's funny that like even that classic Australian tall poppy syndrome, they go for the underdog, but then as soon as you're a bit successful, you can have a lot more detractors all of a sudden. Yeah. But I guess, look, JS still employs a lot of local guys. He's a pretty respected, not just shaper, but businessman, friend. He's been there for a lot of people, as has Paul and our other directors and stuff. And that's just the way it goes in surfing. I think when things get tough, like sure, there's healthy rivalry between like companies and shapers and whatever when things are going well. But when things get hard, everyone does look out for each other. So that was really cool of DMS to, I guess, give our Queensland guys a place to work. He was happy. He was able to get a little bit of rent from us, and we were able to hopefully meet most of our demands. Like the other reason we wanted to put that video together was just to show all the people who are waiting crazy times for boards, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks in some cases, that we're still trying as hard as possible to make everyone surfboards.
Man, that's wild. So just to understand this correctly, so the guys that were working in Tweed and were suddenly out of a job because the border closed, they basically just shipped over to DMS and they worked out of the DMS factory.
Pretty much, yeah. That was not without its challenges. Obviously, like our workforce is almost cut down the middle, so it wasn't just like a clean split of all the sanders and glasses were on our side and all the rest of the other side. It was kind of like as many boards as we could bring from start to finish would happen on the Queensland side, and as many of the guys that were still on the Tweed side, whatever tradesmen, craftsmen were on that side, would just do their part. So it definitely slowed things up a lot, and it was a challenge, but everyone was able to keep working until the borders sort of become a little bit easier lately with exemptions and passes and certain people getting vaccinated if they feel like that's the right thing for them. So that's, got a little bit easier now, but you'll see that clip that comes out that's got even Dan, who's our in-house designer, handles everything from our product photography to the website to a lot of things globally for the brand. But because he was one of the few guys that lived on the New South Wales side near the factory, he was also driving the van and taking those blanks from the Tweed factory to the border and physically handing the blanks over the border to our Queensland guys.
That's just nuts. That's crazy. But it's cool because like I've been talking to a lot of people in different parts of the world, right? Like for, you know, different reasons, obviously for this podcast, this show as well. And like everybody has its own, like they have their own little stories, you know, because of COVID, which is cool in a way, you know, as shitty as it was or is, these like little stories, like they will stay with you forever.
Well, for sure. It's a pretty landmark time in human history for a lot of bad reasons, but also for a lot of good reasons. Even just the beautiful things that you see around the world of like less travel means less pollution, and you see, I don't know, parts of the ocean flourishing that never would have before because they've got less pollution, parts of the, I don't know, even like on that trip I mentioned before, when we were catching up, that where we went to the Northern Territory and we drove the whole way back from the Northern Territory home to the Gold Coast, and we passed through Cairns and we saw the Great Barrier Reef. And that was like without tourists for the first time in living memory for a lot of people. and then like the Daintree Rainforest and lots of natural wonders of the world that are starting to I guess recover because there's less human activity, there's less pollution, there's less boats, planes, everything. So it was a well needed breather, not just for humanity, I guess, but for the planet in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Like it was something.
Doesn't mean I'm not starting to get itchy feet though. I want to be coming over to your part of the world soon.
Do you have any travels coming up?
Yes, I was actually just putting together a bit of a plan for next year. If all being well, yeah. If we can get overseas and come back and quarantine is hopefully a thing of the past, then yeah, I've got a few travel plans. Hopefully be coming to the States, coming to Europe, probably doing a couple of the events that is on the new world tour. And then I'll also potentially be going on a few tours with my best mate's band. I've got a bunch of tours around the world. So before COVID, I got a tour manage for them a little bit. Sick. So hoping to mix my time between a bit of surfing, a bit of music. As much as I'm able to.
That's a pretty cool gig.
I'm trying not to look too far ahead.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah,
it's really good fun. Maddie's been my best mate since we were 6 years old, since first grade at school. And the last few years, their band Hollow Coves, it's like indie folk that they've stepped up from a duo to a lot of their live shows now with a full band. They're going pretty well in Australia, but even better in parts of Europe and Canada and stuff. For whatever reason, their music just really hits home there. So the Europe tour we did just before COVID, end of 2019, was super fun. We started in London and then drove to Berlin and then went all over Germany, into Switzerland, your motherland, went all through there, went through France, then went back through the UK. So hopefully be doing something like that again with a bit of surfing in between.
Dude, that's amazing. That sounds hilarious. Like I didn't know. See, this is the thing. I didn't know this about you. Yeah, I didn't know that you were like a freaking rowdy, you know, going around with a band, like traveling the world. That's epic. But I actually want to go back to the very start of our conversation that wasn't recorded before. I want to you told me how you got your job at JS as the brand manager. And I want you to tell the audience as well how this came about, because that's, I think it's a pretty cool, funny, kind of wild story.
Yeah, I mean, I still trip out on it to this day because it was sort of one of the two dream jobs I had identified from, you know, like high school when you start really falling in love with surfing and like you get your license and you can start going surfing before school, after school, whatever. So yeah, Matt and I, we grew up in the Redlands, which is right where you get the ferry over to North Stradbroke Island. And that's where like B. Durbridge is from, Ethan Ewing and Jason Stevenson, who started JS Industries. And I remember thinking, oh, gee, that's the coolest surf brand. A bunch of my favorite surfers ride for them. They're one of the biggest, if not the biggest in Australia. And I just thought, if I want to have a crack at the surf industry because I love it, then that's probably going to be a really good place to aim for. And so then when, you and I were at that super fun university course, sport management, otherwise known as surfing studies, I was lucky enough to get an internship with Surfing Life magazine. And that was like my other dream for sure, because I loved riding and got on really well with all the crew there. And I got a few things published and it sort of went from an internship to a bit of a part-time role there. And every time I got a magazine edition with a few words in it, I was pretty stoked on it. And I remember I'd go to Jason and pick up a board and I'd just leave a edition of Surfing Life there. And it wouldn't matter if I'd written a review for Allegro. I'd just be like, oh, look, I'm in the journalism team. I'd love to work for you if you could use a journalist or someone who can do X, Y, Z. And then I left a few more magazines and then I left my resume. And after doing that, every time I picked up a board.
Did you leave the resume inside the magazine as well?
Of course, because he's probably going to be a lot more likely to read the magazine than my resume. So I thought I'd just slip that in there so he knows who to call. So after doing that for a while, I eventually, I think the reason that he called me was because he had a guy, epic guy, I'm still mates with to this day, Lockie Leckie. He was sort of wearing many hats there, doing the design, doing a bit of the marketing, doing lots of things.
He was actually my neighbor
for years, and he was about to. Oh yeah, that's right. You know, like
yeah,
well.
Yeah,
yeah. I was, he's an epic dude.
So I was living was right next door,
and it just got a bit too busy for one person to do. So he's so he's so classic. I still see him in the water all the time. But yeah, Lockie was just getting too busy there. The role itself and the company had kind of got beyond what one person could do as far as like design and marketing and everything. And yeah, he had a bit more with his growing family and a side business. So Lockie decided to move on. And so I heard from them they needed someone, but I said to Jason, oh, sorry, now's actually not a good time. I'm going overseas for, I think, 2 months through Europe and Africa to travel with my best friend. And he was like, all right, I'll see you in 2 months. So yeah, went off, went all around Europe, got to cover the Quick Pro France for Surfing Life under the very fine tutelage of Chris Binns, who was on the WSL commentary at the time and taught me how to do a contest wrap and all that fun stuff. Went down to Morocco, did like a little surf odyssey down there all solo, came back after 2 months and thought, all right, time to see if I'm going to go back to uni or if I'm going to get a job that I'm interested in. And I interviewed with Jason and his co-directors, Craig and Paul, and they offered me the job on the spot. They were just like, all right, you're young, you're out of uni, you got the right skill set that we need. And they said, to complement that, we've also got this designer, Jeff. And he just come from Billabong. So we complement each other really well. I handled like all the writing, all the communications, and he handled all the in-house design. So that was how I got my, I guess, dream job at 21, fresh out of uni. And yeah, now it's been coming up to 6 years.
Sick. That's amazing. I love the story.
Fun, but
I love, I mean, the story of like, that, hey,
yeah.
The story of like, sorry, now it's not really a good time. I'm going overseas. And he just goes like, ah, never mind. I'll see you in 2 months. That's amazing. Like, yeah, you haven't even started.
Be the Grom. That's not the right attitude, but yeah.
It's that part. Well,
and plus, I thought I was going to get back and it was going to be this like huge process of, I don't know, of every kid, but I think because I just shown the initiative, like I'd worked for free for Surfing Life and then got the internship and then I'd got some reference from, I don't know, someone who had known those guys that I at least was like honest and hardworking and, hopefully a few good things. And then I got back and they were pretty much like, yeah, you've got the job, start immediately. And that was actually, that first week was December 2015, right when they were unleashing Hi-Fi on the world, which was their like new epoxy construction that had taken Jason and the team 2 years to do. So right from the start, I was like, oh, better communicate this correctly to the world that they've made such an insane product. So since then, that's kind of how I've looked at it, is that I know marketing can be such a broad term across all the industries, but for a surfboard company, that's the quality of what Jason and Paul and the team have got. I just see it as trying to communicate and illustrate to people the quality of the product and the quality of the team, which it's so good. It makes my job super easy. It's just coming out with fun, clear ways to show people, hey, this is what we make. This is what we think you should ride. So from day one, that's kind of been it. And now it's sort of evolved into a little bit bigger team. We've got a bit of a bigger presence in America. We've got an amazing bunch of team riders. So like I said, they make our job so much easier because they help Jason with R&D to make the best boards possible. They are always ready to, I don't know, do a fun video series or whatever just to show people what they're riding and what they think the everyday guy should be riding.
I think that's a really good wrap and kind of like a nice segue to the actual topic I want to talk to you about, and that's surfboards. Because when we travel, that always comes up, right? Like you obviously you want to go on a surf trip, but you only have limited space. And like for me, it's always such a hassle when I go on surf trips because I have too many boards and not enough bags, kind of thing, or money to actually drop, you know, on the excess baggage fee. But I mean, exactly. So like, I kind of just want to talk to you because you're around boards all the time, and I want it. That's why I wanted this, you know, this talk to happen, because I really want to get into like what actually goes into, you know, surfboard design, and obviously like the differences, and I'm sure there is differences from designing boards for the everyday guy or the pros, right? Because obviously the everyday guy, probably that board or these boards, they need to cover way more ground than, let's say, if you design contest boards for a team rider or something like that. So I want to get into like, you know, the tech aspect, the process, the, and then obviously like the making of the boards as well. So I give you the floor, and you can just elaborate a little bit on what actually goes into making surfboards.
Yeah, for sure. So the way that we kind of divide up all of the different models that Jason and Paul have designed is kind of just by wave type, which makes it a bit simpler for everyone. So if you look at your pro guy, they might mostly be focusing on the high performance shortboard, a slight step down from that, and then a step up for when the waves are really good. But for all of us who are your keen surfers that want to have a few boards to cover from flat to fun to really good waves, you'd probably want something from each of our series of boards. And that goes from the summer series, which is pretty crumbly, flatter waves that don't have much power, to the X series, which is kind of like your all-rounder. That's something where, like, if you had to only travel with one board, you'd probably get something from there. It'd cover you if the waves are pretty average, but still hold up if it's decent. And then the Performer series, which is like your performance shortboard, the kind of thing that Julian O'Connor's riding in a contest, that kind of thing. So, and I think the other thing that people might not realize is that you don't have to be an amazing surfer to ride those kind of pro level, like refined shortboards, but you just got to be a bit more selective maybe in the waves you ride them in. So for example, our flagship shortboard for the last 10 years has been the Monster. And it's had a few iterations. It started with the Monster, just the Monster. And then it went to Monster 3, Monster 6, Monster 8. Now we're at the Monster 2020, which came out last year. And that's a refined shortboard that, yeah, your pro guys will ride in contests. But even your guys at average ability like me and you can definitely get the most out of that board, but you just want to be riding that when the waves are curvy, they've got good shape, they're at least like shoulder head height or a bit overhead. And your pro guys are kind of riding that in more stuff when you or I would want to go to something that's a bit shorter, flatter, wider, and more forgiving when the waves aren't doing as much of the work for us. Those guys are still making those boards work because they, like a Julian, wants to be pushing as hard as he can at all times. He wants something as drivey as possible. Whereas for you or me or most people listening to this podcast, if it's, I don't know, chest high and a bit crappy, then we're probably going to have the most fun and go the fastest and get the most joy out of our surfing if we're riding like a 20 or, I don't know, like our equivalent of it, just a more forgiving, easy to ride shortboard is something like a Black Box, which is now the new Zero model,
which is an amazing and that board, came about because Jason was this board.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite boards ever.
Yeah, do you have a couple of JSs?
A couple of JSs. So the thing is, like, over the last like 10 years, right? Like, I moved a lot, and so I have two JSs in Australia still. They're like in somebody's garage. He probably sold them and never told me. And then I have one in Bali still. So, and I'm here like in the bus country.
It's a good place to have
now. So I'm trying to head back to Bali. Yeah, I know. I got to talk to you off camera about these surfboard deals.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like I think the biggest difference is like what you said, right? Like if as soon as waves or the wave size kind of drops or it's not as great, like people need to be more selective. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, right? Like they kind of like, they pick a board based on, you know, let's say the pros who ride them or how it looks, or based on what they think their surfing ability is rather than what it actually, you know, rather than what it actually is. So I just want you to like to talk through about like, you know, how you will go about your selection process of like, you know, of boards. Like, let's say we go about, we go through different conditions and we go from, you know, like a, like a summer day in Australia, pretty flat, pretty weak, pretty small, to like, you know, a really good day on the point, to like a fun day, kind of like, you know, sluggish, slow, but with really good sets in between, a diva, like a punchy beach break. So how would you go about your selection process?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So let me preface this by saying I know how privileged I am to be able to choose from all these boards, but best case scenario, you're going to have a different board for every day that's very different from the other. I'm lucky that I'm in that situation. But if you look at, say, from like the smallest day, and if we keep going to bigger, better pumping, lately has been a really good example of the smallest possible waves you could just about surf around here. We've had an amazing year and a half of waves, literally since COVID. It seems like it's just, I don't know if it's less pollution in the world or I don't know what it is, but the last year and a half, we've had amazing waves almost constantly for 18 months. But spring's properly hit the east coast of Australia and it's been like a foot for weeks. So the two boards I've really been riding since it's been like 1 foot, the Black Baron, which is our 20. I was never really a 20 guy until we did it. And it's sort of the perfect gateway to riding twin fins for your guy that's just been on short boards and more conventional stuff, because it's a twin fin and it's super fast and it's really forgiving, but when the waves are half decent or you get a section, it's got a lot of drive. You can still surf it top to bottom. You can still surf it a bit more like a shortboard than your traditional fish. But that's been, my favorite board as far as making the worst waves really fun. So I kind of look to ride that anytime it's like weak but running a little bit. That's been really fun. And the other board I've been riding is our newest 20, the Big Baron, which is a mid-length. And I know to some people that's like a dirty word. And I was the same. I never really rode mid-lengths. I wasn't interested in them. But then, Matt, my best mate, and a few of our other mates around here, they've been experimenting with mid-lengths. And I guess the Gold Coast is a good place for that because their waves are pretty long. Or when there's not much swell, we often just have really nice little beaches that if they're weak, they still run for a little bit. But yeah, I've been riding that on this little rip bank out front of my house. And if I didn't have that board, I think I would have barely surfed the last couple of weeks. It just, something about having a longer board and the glide, that so many conditions around the world, you wouldn't be able to ride even like a short super groveler like a Black Baron or a Psycho Nacho or other more small wave performance boards. This thing is a mid-length, like mine's it's a 6.9, it's the magic number. But whether you're riding a 6.8 or a 7.0 mid-length around there, it's really good for those tiny waves where you literally wouldn't be able to get up and going or get through the fat section. So a mid-length, I'm a full convert, man. The mid-length is definitely something really special, and it's been cool having friends who are already into mid-lengths try ours. Binzy, a mate in West Oz, he called me one day and he was like, I was on another brand's mid-length and it was all heavy and just, I couldn't even do a turn on it. And I jumped on yours and I could see instantly that you guys like want you to be able to still do a turn on it. Cause like it's a mid-length, but it's still a JS, you know. Jason made it as performance oriented as he could. So I guess that's the thing, trying to get as much as you can out of all conditions. And for me, like I try not to, it's easy not to have any ego about your surfing when you're just the average guy, but I still want to be able to try and fit a little turn in or go as quick as I can and not just go straight if the waves allow for more than that. So I think that's what the right mid-length is good for. And then, yeah, our black Baron 20, if there's any length in the waves and a touch more push, it could be knee high, it could be head high, a head high point break or something, but that's, yeah, that's incredible. And then moving up to like your everyday, your hybrid, your maybe more forgiving shortboard. And so for our range, for the JS range, you're moving from your summer series into your X series. That would be like your black box, like we mentioned before, your monster box, which is now the zero model, which is very, very similar to the monster box. We'll get to that in a sec. And your raging bull and bullseye, which is the Oki model. That actually just won Surfboard of the Year for Australia, got the SBIA Board of the Year for 2021. So I'm very proud about that. But those X series boards, that's kind of what you'd ride a few inches shorter than your height. So for me, I'm 6 foot, 80 kilos. Most of my board's like 28-ish liters. So for me, a monster box is like 5'10", 19 and a quarter, 2 3/8, 28 liters. And when you find your right dimensions for that, like everyday kind of performance-y board, but not for pumping waves, you can ride it. Like I rode that this afternoon at D-Bar. It was 2 foot sloppy, but you can kind of ride whatever you want. That's the perfect board for me. And then you can choose that board and then probably keep the same thickness and go up and down. I think too many people, Jason said this in a lot of interviews lately when he's been asked about board design, too many people I think get a little bit too into the whole volume, like I need a specific amount of volume. But if you just look at, all right, for my weight range, I should be riding this kind of thickness of board and roughly this volume, but you just got to remember that for me riding a 28 liter board, the exact same liters in a board that's wider, has a flatter rocker, it's going to paddle a lot better, not because it's got any more liters or anything, but purely because of the plan shape and the entry rocker being lower. So people just need to remember that. And I think, yeah, the other main thing that I've come to see from Jason working with a lot of the world's best and just his mates and the other average but keen surfers is that, yeah, you don't have to change the thickness too much. You'll start with, you say my Magic 510, that's 2 3/8. Keep the same thickness as you go down, but that board just gets a little bit wider. So my 510 Monster Box, that's 2 3/8, would translate to like a 5.6 Black Baron that's the same thickness, is a little bit more volume, and that translates up as well to a 6.0 Monster that's still 2 3/8, that's about the same volume, but because it's curvier, might not paddle quite as good, but it's going to have the release and the maneuverability that you want in waves like that. So that's, I guess, kind of the overview from like your 5.6, 20 to your 5.10 all-rounder to your 6.0 shortboard, and then yeah, if you keep going from there, then our like good wave boards are forget me not. The original was sort of what Parco rode to his world title, that and the monster back in 2012.
It's also a really great board. Become the forget me not too. That's the one. That's the one that's still in Australia somewhere.
That's really the one. That's like we just did a
really
series for JS Garage TV, and it features that very heavily.
It's amazing. Like it's been around for so long, and it's still like when the waves are
exactly,
good.
Yeah.
Well, at least like when I was in Australia,
it's something that you really want to have. Yeah.
It's the go to board for sure.
Sorry, son, you go.
No, it's just we're lagging a little bit.
Yeah,
I think we're a little bit delayed.
Anytime. Yeah.
So. Sorry about
that's
that.
That's right. We're very far away, so I think we're doing pretty good with this 5 second lag.
That's true.
But yeah, the forget me not, that's the board that you really want ready to go anytime. If the waves have got shape, doesn't even have to be that big, but as long as it's curvy, it can only be head high. And that's where we see a lot of our team riders going for it. And as soon as the waves get a little bit flatter, then they'll go to a monster or a zero or something. But yeah, the forget me not, that's kind of your good wave board that you ride probably close to your height. So for me, it's a 6.0 or a 6.1. And then that sort of becomes your step up. So as you get into bigger, better waves, so for example, I've got a 6.4 that's sort of my favorite board. If like Kira or the points are really good, and they don't have to be that big, but if you just want a little bit more rail line to draw out your turns or a bit extra paddle power, that board just gets a bit longer. It will stay about the same width, maybe even get a touch narrower as you go longer. And then can stay the same thickness. Like for me, that's 2 3/8. That's what most guys around the 75 to 80 kilo mark or 165 pounds would ride. But the forget-me-not, because of the rail height, because it starts thicker under the chest and foils out to a nice thinner rail, you ride that board a bit thicker. So that's probably what a lot of other step ops would be similar, that you ride them a little bit thicker because of the foil, because of that thickness under the chest going to a finer rail so it can bite in and harness all the speed of good waves. So for me, like the perfect step up, yeah, is that forget-me-not 6'4", 18 7/8, so maybe a fraction narrower than my 5'10". And then like 2 7/16 to 2.5. And then, yeah, naturally that'll be a little bit more volume because it's longer and it's thicker, and that bit extra volume's always going to help if you're trying to paddle into a decent wave.
Volume is your friend. That's for sure. Always.
100%. And, that's probably why we did a bit of analytics lately on the site, just to see kind of what's, piquing people's interest. And our most viewed page for a few months straight behind the homepage has been the volume calculator. So that's something we've had for a couple of years, and that's got just a couple really basic questions that it's a general piece of advice, but it often gets it pretty close, where you put in your ability, whether it's beginner up to like almost pro, like ripping board riders level, and then your height, weight, fitness, and then it'll recommend you roughly what kind of volume you should be riding, depending on wave type and everything. So I think once you get close to that sort of volume range, and nail your thickness, which really just goes off your weight. Like for us, it's pretty easy. If we look at a team rider to a decent keen surfer, like, can just be intermediate, but anyone like around my height, weight, 75 to 80 kilos, a lot of our team riders are the same thing. You're riding about 28 liters, you got about 2 3/8 thickness. If you go down from there, you go down 5 kilos, then that's Ace Bucken, that's low 70 kilos. He's riding 2 5/16, around 26 to 27 liters. Go down again, that's Jeremy Flores, that's high 60 kilos, up to 70, and that's like 2 1/4. So every like 5 kilos or 10 or so pounds, then it just, the boards will get that 16th thinner or thicker, and the volume will change by a liter or so. So that makes it, yeah, a lot easier, I think, if people to kind of just get that in their head, that it's just like a pretty easy scale to work off. The other thing that people have been really enjoying lately is Jason decided to do this set of dimensions called the Easy Rider dimensions. And that's literally just our like most popular boards, but done in thicker dims that hide a lot of volume, so that you can pick up, like Jason made that because he wanted to get his 33 liters of volume in a 5.11 and not in a 6.2. So you can pick up one of his boards and you're like, geez, I'd almost ride that. And then you look at the dims and see how thick it is and see how much volume they've got in it. And it's just hidden really nicely. So an Easy Rider board is, yeah, those thicker, a bit wider dimensions of pack over volume, but yeah, it's hidden in the middle and it falls out to the rail. Oh. Well, yeah, easy rider, if you wanted to get more volume in your board without having to ride much longer, then that's worth checking out for sure.
Yeah. I think for the last like 10 minutes, you dropped a lot of knowledge right there. And I think there's some real golden nuggets there, but you also dropped some real interesting points. And two points I really want to mention is like, so you talked about people shouldn't be caught up or too caught up about the whole volume side, right? Like, and I don't know, like it was funny when you said it, because like when I was younger, literally I'd be so crazy about volume. Like I would go down to the 0.5. So 0.4 is like, I would, you know, if I go to a shop and I see a stock board and I really liked it, and like the board was usually I write between 25.5 back then to like 26.5 liters. If it wasn't within that, like I would not touch it, just because like, no, I need to be on 26 liters or 25.5 liters.
Yeah, it's not in my range.
It's crazy. And now it's kind of like the best way to do it. It's like, I just hold it under my arm. And if it feels good, that's the board, you know, like it's a lot less pragmatic now.
Yeah.
Or like more pragmatic, actually.
Yo.
And then, I mean, and then the other thing is you talked a lot about mid-length, and it made me smile because mid-length is kind of like the hottest topic in surfing right now. A lot of people shit on it. A lot of people like it. And for me, I always wondered, what is it? Like, isn't a mid-length just a mini mel? You know, it's like, I mean, it's the same kind of concept, no?
Somewhat, yeah, I guess, yeah, the mid-length is definitely a similar length of board. It's just, it's a style of board for us. It was kind of like the throwback to that longer shortboard, I guess, that all the old boys used to ride on the points before boards got really short. But it's also a very functional length. Like I said, it's something that's super easy to paddle. It gives you time between sections. It gives you momentum. It lets you do a lot of things that like shortboards can't do, but it lets you turn in a way that longboards can't do. So
yeah,
I think they've definitely got their place. Like I've seen the value in it in the last month when there's been barely any waves. There's definitely days that have been like a fat little rip bank, barely just getting to shore, that on even like the world's best 5'6" groveler, you're not even getting moving on. But on a 6'8" mid-length, you're paddling in, gliding when it's barely even breaking, fading left and right, and then racing over a dead section to like hit the inside, run around, do it all again when anyone on a board much shorter isn't having a good time. So yeah, they've definitely got their place in your quiver. I'm lucky I got to try a few of our Big Baron, but I think one of the things that really opened our eyes to how good they are is Harrison Roach, which is who we decided to work with for the Big Baron. He was kind of the guy in that space. The conversation started when he did this thing for Stab, I think it was last year, called The Mysterious Affair. And it was a cool premise, like a lot of things Stab do. And it was about whether that, yeah, exactly. It was about whether that hipster retro mid-length log guy could still rip on a shortboard. And of course, Harry's is a freak, so he could do whatever. And before he went into the mid-lengths and the logs and stuff, he was a pro junior doing air reverses with Julian and all those guys. But he really liked the board we made him, which was a Raging Bull. So that's kind of like, yeah, the user-friendly all-rounder that started as Oki's model that became this like the fun all-rounder that Jules and a bunch of guys would ride if it's 2 foot and they want a flare. They'd also be able to use when it's 6 foot and hollow because it's, yeah, it's that classic, kind of like an Easy Rider Jim's board. It's thicker under the chest. It's thinner in the rail. It's got a pulled-in round tail. So Harrison really liked that as a shortboard, and we're like, hey, we're looking at doing some mid-lengths. What do you think about trying a few and working together? And right from the start, I know Jason wasn't sure if he was going to have heaps of feedback or if he was going to love it straight away because it was the first time he'd really done a mid-length. But almost immediately he's like, oh, this, even for me, like Harrison had a massive quiver of boards from Thomas and a bunch of other world-class shapers. And he was like, even for me, this feels a gap in my quiver that I genuinely would want to fill anyway. So yeah, 100%. I want to jump on board and work with you. So we didn't really even have to make that many changes at all since he grabbed the first version of the Big Baron. He wanted to tweak like the beak and the nose, just partly from an aesthetic point of view and partly just from the function of the beak and the nose and the way the entry rocker is. But yeah, other than that, he kind of just got to show us what the Big Baron could do. And I remember there was one day where they filmed at South Stratty. Classic, yeah, it was classic Strad, like chunky 4 or 5 foot, well over head pits. And Cruzy was there that day and another mate. And those guys were really good surfers. Were like, Harry was getting 3 times the waves as anyone else because he was like paddling fast, like being able to backdoor section with so much speed and then get back out the back and just hunt down peaks with all the paddle power of a mid-length. So yeah, I think that proves why they're worth it, whether you want to try and ride them in good waves like that. Like I personally, if I'm going to South Stratty, I'd rather just have like a forget-me-not or a decent shortboard. I'm not going to be messing around with a mid-length too much in waves like that. But in tiny little rip banks, like is all we've had to surf the last month here, or a fun running point break, they're among the most fun you can have.
Cool.
So we have, so we covered the mid-length debate. I like it because I was, you know, they've been like everywhere, right? Like the debate of mid-lengths has been everywhere in all the surf mags. And I always wondered like, okay, but like, you know, what's the difference? Like why are they so hot right now? So thanks for clarifying that. That helped.
My pleasure.
I have a question for you. So, you know how surf brands in general, they're very prone to like overmarket some boards, right? And I hear a lot, not necessarily from JS, just in general, right? That it's like the one board quiver here, the one board quiver there, the one board quiver for everything. Is there such a thing? Is there a one board quiver?
No, I don't think so at all. There's too much fun to be had with finding the right board for the right day, you know? Sure, there's definitely boards that we do and that a lot of the best brands and best shapers do that can give that a good shot. Like for us, I said the Raging Bull would probably be the all-rounder you'd take on a trip if you literally had a single board bag or no budget to buy another board. That would be your board that could grovel if you got skunked and you could easily paddle into some decent chunky waves and it would do it all. But yeah, I don't think the board that covers it all really exists. But that's the fun thing about surfing is you might find your magic shortboard that helps you surf your best in a pretty big range of waves. And then like for me, one of the most satisfying things in surfing this year has been finding that mid-length and then finding this other little groveler that we do called the Flamefish that just gets me super excited to surf when it's 1 foot because I feel like I can actually do what's in my head. Kind of, I can actually brace in the line and try it like a little finner or something when riding most other boards and waves like that, I can barely get going. So, yeah, I think that's one of the best things about surfing is the constant chase for what's the best board for that condition. A quiver killer can exist for someone maybe on a budget, but I don't think it's a real thing.
I had a feeling you would say that. But it's like there's no such thing as a one board quiver. It's just
we all need lots of boards.
I mean, exactly. It's just it's like our fix just to buy as many surfboards as we can. What's your perfect travel setup? So if you go on a trip, let's say. And I'm not talking about a road trip where you can just load up the car with whatever you want. I'm talking about like you have to take a plane and you have to be strategic about what you're going to be packing. What would you take on, let's say, a two-week trip overseas? And then I have a different scenario later on, but let's just do this one first.
Cool. One of my ideal trips when we can travel again would be to just a fun tropical surf destination like you just been to the Maldives. I've been there. It's beautiful. It's pretty user-friendly. Still get barreled. You can still find uncrowded waves. Somewhere like that, I guess me showing a bit of restraint would be probably a three-board quiver. and that would probably look
I think that's like the perfect number. Three boards is a magic number.
Yeah, I think three is pretty achievable for a lot of people who have got the means to go on a surf trip like that. It's a three board bag. It's not way too heavy. It's probably going to be like 20 kilos or something. I'd probably start with, you've got the luxury of looking at the forecast when it's like that. So if I saw it was going to be 6 foot every day, then this might change, but just to cover all bases for like a really fun range of waves. Yeah. I'd definitely go like a twin fin, like the Black Baron that could just make otherwise real average waves just the funnest thing in the world. You still even ride it when the waves are decent. As long as there's a bit of length to the wave on your forehand especially, then that thing's going to open your mind to new lines and new amounts of speed and stuff. So I'd for sure have something like that for the smaller days or for when you want to pick a different line. Then your magic shortboard. So for me, that looks like probably a monster, forget-me-not, at my height, like 6'0", the kind of thing where you're still going to get plenty of use out. Like if you're buying a board for the trip, you'd still ride that board a lot at home. unless you live in like Southern California or something, you might not be using it as much, but you want to have your like performance shortboard that is your go-to. And then, yeah, a slight step up. So for me, that looks like a 6'2 or a 6'4 forget-me-not, that few inches longer than my shorty, that's got the rail line and the drive to handle faster, chunkier waves. It's going to paddle a little bit easier. And that you can still ride if it's only head high or a bit overhead, just say you snap your everyday shortboard or something. So, yeah, I think that's a good way to cover your bases. You got your fun, smaller board. You got your everyday shortboard that you'll probably be riding most of the time. And then you got your slight step up.
Cool. Actually, I had a second scenario, but that basically you just packed it all into one, because I wanted to talk about the Maldives particularly. I think yours, yeah. you already covered it, because like for me, it's like we do, or like Luix has a lot of clients, right? Like going to the Maldives, they're sort of like in the yeah. intermediate to, you know, like lower intermediate to, I would say, like high-end intermediate surfers. You know, not like they're family guys, or girls for that matter. They don't, you know, surfing yeah. isn't their everyday life. And you've been to the Maldives. I have been to the Maldives. There's a lot of area to cover. Like there's a lot of different waves. There's a lot of different, you know, depending on where you go, there's a lot of different conditions that you have to account for. And, but I guess you already talked about, is there anything you want to add? If you would say, all right, I'm going to send a 35 to 45 year old guy or girl, you know, intermediate surfer to the Maldives, what should they be looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would reiterate the fun board thing, like a board like the Black Baron. Actually, one of my really good mates, he went on his honeymoon there a couple of years ago, and yeah, he's probably the little bit keener surfer than a lot of those people you mentioned. He'd be more advanced, I guess, to surf a bit at home, but yeah, he was on his honeymoon, wasn't at all intending to surf all the time, because his missus doesn't surf and she loves the beach. So they were just going to be swimming and hanging out together and doing honeymoon things. But he brought a Black Baron. He bought one that he inherited from JS, my boss. He's the exact same dims, and he's one of my few friends that's always sort of on the wait list when Jason trades a board in. And he got this Black Baron at Jason's. And I remember he came back and he's like, dude, I only had like a 2-day window where we'd done all the other activities and there wasn't that much swell, but he just found this little left and he's a goofy, and he said it was just like the funnest thing ever. And on another board, he said he barely could have really got moving, but on this little twinny, he was just pushing as hard as he could, flying down the line, just sort of doing, just trying stuff and getting creative. And I think that's pretty common in the Maldives, is like you're going to get a fair share of days like that. It's going to be fun, maybe a little bit windy, or maybe a little bit weak and just a bit softer, and you need a board that's going to connect the dots and just keep you inspired. So I'd say for sure most people going to a place like that, whether they're advanced like him or they're not as experienced, a fun board that's going to be easy to get speed will be really good. And then don't be afraid to go a little bit of length. I think that's the other thing with plenty of people the last decade or more have been a little bit too concerned about. It's got to be shorter. It's got to be shorter than my height. Whereas I know a lot of the best surfers around here, they've kind of gone back to riding a little bit longer boards. Like you run down the points and heaps of guys are riding 6'4s almost for the novelty, but also because they see like Mick and Parko in the early 2000s, they see how well they surfed them. And also how much easier they can be to surf and paddle in, and someone's trying to develop their turns and go from intermediate to like the next level in their surfing, then a bit longer board or the bit longer rail line can be really good for them. So I'd say, yeah, don't worry about going as short and wide and packing as much volume in as you can that way. Go a little bit longer. Go aboard like you might see guys riding when the waves are solid, even if you're only riding when it's 3-4 foot. That's the way to go.
Perfect. I like that answer a lot. Go longer. Length and width is your friend.
I think so. Yeah, so for sure. I mean, you don't go overboard, but you really can't be afraid to go bigger.
Exactly. Absolutely. Now, A little bird was telling me about a new wax company on the market. What's that about?
Oh, yeah. So that would be, Cake Club, this side project that I've got with a couple buddies that, yeah, I think I mentioned to you a few times in passing. Hasn't quite made its way by any other means to Europe yet. So, yeah, thanks for the plug. But, that started beginning of last year. We sort of already had the idea for a subscription surf essentials company. It came from me and a couple of buddies. So we already had a few subscriptions to things outside of surfing, like our whole house. We had a toilet paper subscription. And it was cool because it was something that you always need that you don't want to forget. And then it just so happened that you buy a box at a time. It's a bit cheaper and some of the profits go to a charity. So I had that subscription and a few other ones. And then we got talking about how that could apply to surfing. And we're like, yeah, that doesn't exist in surfing yet. We should do that for wax and the other stuff that you need to surf regularly. So yeah, we looked into it. No one else had done it. We thought, all right, well, makes sense to begin with the industry standard, which for here, for America, for a lot of the world, is sex wax. And then we thought, all right, well, the other thing you need to surf or even just go to the beach regularly is skin protection. It's zinc, yeah. It's sunscreen, even like pawpaw ointment. So looked at what was the best in class. In my mind, it was We Are Feel Good Inc. because that's Australian made. They recycle a lot of their stuff. They're very ocean friendly, environmentally friendly. There's less chemicals in their products. It's actually good for your skin. Even the zinc feels like a moisturizer when you rub it in. So yeah, that's co-owned by Jake Patterson, ex-pro surfer from West Oz, and a few other families. So I hit him up. He liked the idea for us to sell that as part of a subscription package. So yeah, from the start, we had sex wax, We All Feel Good, kind of the main essentials you need to go to the beach or surf regularly. And we launched that early COVID. It just found was the idea simmering, ready to go. And then COVID happened and we're like, oh, people can't even really travel right now. And if they can, surf stores are often closed. So yeah, we launched it then and yeah, just got a lot of really good feedback. For us, it was just like the way to solve a problem. It was convenience for us and most other surfers around, whether you're on the Gold Coast like me and there's surf shops on every second corner, or you're more likely in Brisbane, Sydney, any of the big cities overseas that a lot of people surf in, but you have to commute to get waves and you're not always able to go to a surf shop at 6 a.m. when you're just driven from your house to down the beach to surf. So yeah, it was definitely about solving a problem. And we thought, all right, how can we take this to the next step? And that was always going to be more products that are either like best in class or they're the best for the environment. And that was when we got connected with this guy in Sydney who was making his own wax, and there was less chemicals in it than sex wax and a lot of the established brands, but he was also giving 100% of his manufacturing profits to a couple of charities that like take plastic out of the ocean. So that was really cool. We saw one of the charities called Bye Bye Plastic Bags, one of them. And it's just a couple of young girls in Bali who started it when they were in high school. And now it's a legitimate charity that employs them and a few other girls to take plastic off the beach and stuff. So he just takes all the profits left over from once the cost of the wax is done and invests it into charities like that. So I thought, well, that makes sense. His heart's in the right place. There's less chemicals in the product. So then we started making our own Cake Club wax with him. So yeah, that's where it's at the moment. We've got sex wax is like the industry leader that a lot of people are just going to always want, or at least until we show them something that's a lot better and a lot better for the planet. And then we've got Cake Club wax and we've got the We Are Feel Good range. And yeah, it's been a year and a half and it's been cool, I guess, prove that it solved the problem for enough people that we've got a lot of subscribers that have stuck around for a year and a half now. And the latest change we've made is we've brought on Matt Wilkinson and Jacob Wooden. So two good mates of mine, Wilco being ex-pro surfer, now country music star. And then we've also got Woody, who's one of my best mates. He's a cinematographer. One of the best surfing cinematographers in the world. And it happened when both of those guys were stuck in lockdown in Byron Bay at Wilco's place. And they've been surfing a lot, but they just so happened they hadn't waxed up their boards because they didn't have any wax. And then Woody's dad sent him a care package from where he lives on the Central Coast usually, and it had his Kate Club package in there. And they FaceTimed me one day. They're like, no way, we've got wax. We've got wax. Waxed up both their boards, went and surfed pumping tallows in a couple different places. And Woody's like, dude, we got to show the masters. This is the best thing ever. So after going back and forth with those guys a little bit, they're now on board, parts of the company. And, yeah, we're stoked. They're just the funniest, most genuine combo of guys. And I think that's all the idea needs, really, is just to be shown to a few more people. And it's going to be Woody filming Wilco talking to himself about being an anti-waxer or a double waxer, then so be it. So, yeah, that's where we're at.
Man, that's amazing. So for everybody listening in Australia, they can find you where? kateclub.com.au, or what's the website called?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just the Kate Club. Yeah, just the Kate Club website, Kate Club Surf Wax, Google that. And then on socials, Kate Club Surf Wax. Yeah, and then that's sort of where we're at the moment. But the plan is to sort of be the broker for all of your needs for surfing regularly. So we've got Sex Wax, their own Kate Club Wax. We're in talks with Phil at the moment. We're trying to bring that to Australia just because that's another good quality wax that people can't get otherwise. And then, yeah, more of the We Are Feel Good Ink range. Because I've got friends who don't even surf, just girls who are like, oh, they do the best sunscreen or they do the best sink. So, yeah, that's what we're doing. And hopefully we get to tell more people about it. Now we got Woody and Wilco on board.
Beautiful, man. Sounds awesome. I have nothing else left. I'm done. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Is there anything you want to add?
It was good. It was really nice to see your face.
Yeah, dude. Absolutely.
Maybe I'll interview you for a little bit.
Sure. Can we do it off camera?
Comes to you and for Lurex and yeah. Okay.
Say again. I'm gonna say goodbye to the audience, but yeah, that's all top secret. So I have to switch the camera off, and we do this off camera.